You're listening to Trucking with Authority with Kenny Long. Now is the best time in a long time to take the leap and become a motor carrier. We'll dispel the rumors, teach you how to avoid the scams, take your questions, and give you the tools you need to get your own authority and get the success you deserve. Let's head down the audio road and start trucking with authority.
Treat a man as he is, and he will remain as he is. Treat a man as he can be, and he will become as he can and should be. Quote by Stephen Covey from The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. Welcome to the show. This is Trucking with Authority, the place to find direction on your journey to success. My name is Kenny Long, and for the next hour, consider me the navigator on that journey. So let's sit down and discuss the direction you're going to take. I'm here to help you set goals, strategize a plan, and help you reach success. Tonight we can discuss anything from getting started as a driver in the business, to becoming an owner-operator, to getting your own authority, pulling your own freight, dealing with the FMCSA, the insurance requirements, record-keeping requirements, working with brokers, using load boards, finding direct freight, how to handle shippers and receivers, factoring services. And tonight, our primary topic is the relationship of an owner-operator and a motor carrier. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to add tonight, go ahead and press number one at any time. Elizabeth is in the other room screening calls tonight. We'd be happy to get everything you have on the air. Your calls are what make this show important. So whatever topic you would like to talk about tonight, that will be the topic of the hour. So we have a lot of questions that happen throughout the week, and I want to go ahead and jump into a few of them. One of the big questions this week was, should I incorporate or become an LLC? And that's a big question. There's a lot of different aspects to that. And we'll dive into that a little. And the person that I was talking to, when I started explaining it, almost began to get offended, because they had heard so many different rumors and I would consider somewhat poor advice, not well thought out advice. And he thought that if he was to incorporate or become an LLC, without any question, he was completely separated from any possible liabilities. That was his primary reason to do any of that. Absolutely. One of his comments was he didn't want his kids to be sued for something that he had done. He didn't want to lose everything he had. And that's a little bit of misinformation. There is a tiny bit of truth to that. There is another layer that is added. But to think that you're completely separated from any fault that you may have, any wrongdoing that you or your company may do, and you're completely separated because you filled out a piece of paper with the state, which can cost anywhere from a $50 up to maybe a few hundred dollars, depending on which state. That little state fee and that one little form, that one little piece of paper, just by doing that, that's all you need to completely separate yourself from liability. Many people think that's the case. Attorneys will tell you that that is the case. But there's a lot more to it than that. So if you're going into business, if you're a company driver now and you're thinking of going into becoming an owner-operator, or if you're an owner-operator, you're thinking of taking a new leap and becoming a motor carrier, and essentially you're starting a new business, really, you have to review your situation and decide if it's right for you to incorporate or become an LLC. So first, let's discuss the difference between a corporation and an LLC. Now, both of them are handled at the state level. You file with your state where your business resides. And as I said, the fee is usually, some states are, I think as low as $45, I believe, some upwards of $500 or $600, depending. And it's just government fees, really, is all you're paying for. And it really is as simple as just a quick little form you fill out. Now, either of them, and most of you have probably heard the commercial radio ads where they talk about how incorporating in this state or that state can save you all this money and liabilities, and they can do it for a fee. Well, I'll tell you what. That's ridiculous. It's far more complicated to incorporate in any other state than where you reside. So let's get started there. Or an LLC, a corporation or LLC. It's far more difficult. Second, one of these off-the-wall companies, all they're doing is filling out that simple form. If you need any advice or you need somebody to fill it out in a manner that you know it's done right, you really need to hire an attorney. If you just want to have somebody do it, you just want it done, go to your state Secretary of State website, which whatever state you reside, and almost every state has the ability to file these online. Now, going back to incorporate or LLC, what is the difference? A corporation, while it's held at the state level, is recognized at the federal level. That's really the biggest difference. An LLC is recognized at the state level, but you have a choice of how you're recognized with the IRS, and other states won't recognize you the same way. So that's important because in the trucking business, we're always crossing state lines, and you need to know how other states will recognize you. So which is better? That's a hard one too. My opinion, and it's just an opinion, if you really need to look at a complicated situation, then you need to look at talk to an attorney. But my opinion, at the basic level, I would say 5 years ago, a corporation was probably the best of the two. Since then, LLCs are becoming more and more common. More and more states are starting to have a standardized way that they recognize LLCs. Although some states still don't recognize an LLC as a separate entity, and they'll treat an LLC as a pass-through organization. And I know that gets a little bit complicated there, but the benefit of an LLC with some states treating it as that pass-through organization is you may be able to avoid some of the small state taxes that we've discussed on other shows, such as the New Jersey situations where there's been stories of trucks being impounded on the roadside because they're not registered with the state division of taxation. And this happens. They will be impounded because they're not registered to pay tax there. Well, the way the law is worded in New Jersey, and this is obviously subject to change, but currently, is if you are an LLC, the way New Jersey recognizes that is similar to a sole proprietorship or a partnership. And those are not required to register the same way that a corporation is. So as an LLC, that's one of the benefits. You still are subject to pay these taxes and so forth, but you're not required to register in the same way. So you're less likely to get caught in one of these obstacles where your truck could be impounded because you're not just registered. Now, how does a state register corporations from other states? Well, a corporation, as I said, is recognized by all the states. So if you're a corporation in one state and you do business in another state, especially if you have any offices or you do steady business in another state, you're subject to taxation in that other state at a corporate level, which means you may be required to file with the Division of Taxation as a foreign corporation. Now, that gets really, really complicated. Here we are doing business as a motor carrier crossing every state line, and we have to register in every single state as a foreign corporation? Well, technically, that's a possibility. If you look at the really big mega fleets, they are registered in every single state. Of course, they have offices literally in every single state. They have yards and terminals in every single state. So it makes sense that they are, in fact, registered as a corporation in every single state. Now, we conduct business as small carriers in every state. Do we need to register in every state as well? That's a tricky one. As I said, as if you are a corporation, you're supposed to register in New Jersey, supposed to register in Pennsylvania and multiple other states. A lot of states have DOT requirements where you're supposed to get a state DOT number, and other states have found a way around that because, again, if you look at the complications in this industry with the apportioned tag and the IFTA and the UCR, Unified Carrier Registration, all states are supposed to recognize all businesses equally, all of the trucking businesses. But some states have found a way around that by saying we're going to tax the corporation for doing business in this state. Now, there's a lot more complicated mess to it than that. And again, you should probably talk to an attorney or an accountant on that, but that's where some of the benefits of being an LLC come into play. They can get you around it because as a sole proprietor or a partnership, if you're recognized that way by these other states, they don't tax you the same way. So an LLC is probably the better way to go right now. All of these rules and laws are subject to change, and they will. And in the future, that may change. If you register as an LLC, in the future, you could always incorporate and vice versa. A lot more paperwork, and it can be a complicated process. But an LLC right now is probably the best way to go. Now, once you form either a corporation or an LLC, you have choices of how you're taxed. A corporation can be simply, if you just register for a corporate and become a corporation, you incorporate your business, by default, you're recognized as a C Corp. A C Corp is taxed by the IRS. The corporation itself pays taxes. Each shareholder pays taxes on the dividends they pull out. Now, again, this is something you need to talk to your accountant about. If you are a corporation, you can register as an S Corp. An S Corp is the IRS designation to be pass-through taxation. So you're taxed on the business as it flows through to you. So the owner of the business or the owners of the business are taxed on that income as if it's a partnership, similar to as if it was a partnership. Talk to your CPAs and accountants on how to set that up best. Now, with an LLC, you have the choice of being taxed as either a partnership, which is, at its most basic, simple form, a sole proprietorship with multiple owners, so you don't even have to file separate tax returns in a way, or you can be taxed as an S Corp, which separates the business from your personal business, your personal transactions. The benefit of separating that is you can pay yourself basically a salary, and you don't have to pay the employment tax on the remainder. So if you pay yourself, let's say the business owns or earns $100,000 for the year, a reasonable truck driver salary might be 45 or 50. You could pay yourself 45 or 50. The IRS would recognize that that's a reasonable truck driver salary. The business earned more than that. You own a business, so you are taxed on that income of the business, but you're not taxed for that extra 15% on self-employment tax. Again, talk to your accountant on how all that works. Now, the separation of liability part is something that we need to discuss. That's the part where people get very, very confused. Now, imagine that you don't own a business. Imagine that you go work for someone else as a driver. And so you're driving someone else's truck, one of the mega fleets, for example. You're driving someone else's truck, and you are in an accident, and there's a fatality. You, as the driver, will be under the microscope, and you, as the driver of that truck, are subject to litigation. You could be sued for that. They will look at your logs. They will look at all of the contributing factors, your skill as a driver, your everything you did that day, and if you are found to be at fault, you, as the driver, could be sued for literally everything you own. That's just how it works in this country. You could be held accountable for that. Even if you don't own the truck, you don't own the company, and you're just sitting behind the seat holding steering wheel, you're still responsible for your actions. That is the same in every business. If an electrician accidentally electrocutes someone while he's working for someone else, that electrician personally could be held accountable at fault. If you're not working for anyone at all, and you do something to harm someone, just in public, somehow you harm someone, you can be held accountable. So with that said, if you're driving a truck, even if you work for somebody else, you are accountable for that. Now, let's say that you own the business and you hire a driver, you hire that guy, for example, that guy. And that guy gets in an accident and that guy is going to be held accountable and he'll be hauled off to court. Well, that guy works for you. Guess what? The attorneys go after the person with the deepest pockets. And if he works for you, chances are they think you've got deeper pockets. You are going to be hauled into court as well. Somebody else was driving the truck, but you will be responsible because you are just maybe the manager of this business. Now imagine that you own a fleet. You don't even have anything to do with this fleet. You get a check every quarter for the profits that this fleet makes. And you have somebody else that manages the fleet for you. And that fleet goes out and is in a fatality accident. You haven't even spoken with the driver. You've never met this person before. You have a manager for this fleet that you talk to maybe once a week just to check in and see how things are going. Guess what? You could still be hauled into court for that. Given the right set of circumstances, you could still be liable financially for anything that happens, any harm, that any losses that your company does. Now, there's a little bit more separation there, of course. There's more separation, but you could still be responsible. So now, let's assume that you are the driver, you own the truck, you manage the business, you own the business. Do you really now think that being an LLC or a corporation will separate you from the liability? So, attorneys will tell you that you should probably incorporate or become an LLC. And there is some truth to that. There is a little bit of help there. There's a small little paper-thin layer of protection there. But it's so easily pierced that that's not the primary reason why you would do it. And again, the primary reason why you would do it is for taxation purposes. If you are earning, typically the magic number is $65,000 to $70,000 per year, and any monies above and beyond that can stay in the company, and you're taxed on that as not as an employee, so you don't pay the employment tax on that money. But liability is not a good reason to incorporate. Once you do incorporate, there is a lot more paperwork involved. You're basically running two separate entities at this point. You'll probably have to do payroll, which means you have to write yourself a paycheck every week or every month, however you want to do it. You have to keep track of that payroll. You have to pay yourself the taxes and file all the tax forms that go along with payroll, which is complicated. You have to keep the books on your business separate from the books of your personal operations, which you really should do anyway, even if you're a sole proprietor, but it becomes even more important because now the IRS will look at this under a microscope if you're ever audited. Now, that right there is the number one way that the corporate veil, so to speak, can be pierced. It is nearly impossible, well, I'll say it is impossible, to separate yourself financially from your business. If you file a corporation or you're an LLC, you personally will still have to file, and I know these commercials you hear on the radio, if you file in Delaware, we immediately can get you corporate credit. That's the biggest bunch of garbage ever. You can't get corporate credit by filing that little piece of paper with the state. It just doesn't happen. Eventually, once you have history with your business, eventually that business may have enough assets and some credit worthiness that the business can stand for itself. But even at that point, if you're issued a credit card or you take out a loan, somebody will have to personally sign for that loan. Somebody will have to personally be responsible for that loan. There are Fortune 500 companies that have corporate credit cards. Now, they distribute these corporate credit cards to key personnel in the business. High-up managers and supervisors might get a corporate credit card for these Fortune 500 companies. Even at that level, somebody has to sign for each individual card. So if you're a manager at a Fortune 500 company and you're issued a corporate credit card, you are still responsible for that. The credit itself is tied to the business, and you may have an exceptional credit line, but if you don't pay that bill, or the business doesn't pay that bill, that comes back on you personally. So if you own a corporation and you think that somehow you'll get corporate credit, believe me, you will still have to sign for that personally up until at least a certain point. So in the beginning, the first few years, you will absolutely be responsible for nearly every dime the company is liable for. So there's no protection from liability financially, and there's no protection from liability from any losses or anything that may happen. So it's important to understand that. Now, if you do intend to use a corporation or LLC for the purposes of the liability protection, keeping everything separate is immensely important, because what will happen is if you're ever sued for any type of wrongdoing, the first thing that the attorneys will do to pierce that corporate veil is subpoena all of your documents. And if they can prove that you intermingle your monies, which could be as simple as you have a personal credit card that you use all of the time to buy dinner or buy gas for your personal vehicle, and once a month you go out and you buy some big product because your company doesn't have a corporate credit card, so you use your personal credit card to buy a computer or, you know, something specific to the business, and you write that off on your business, you call that a business expense, but you use your personal monies for that. All of a sudden, you intermingle your business with your personal finances, you have just ruined any chance of having any protection from any liabilities. So, and I will tell you, going back to that, since you have to personally back almost everything you do, again, it's nearly impossible to completely separate yourself from any liabilities. Now, there is a like I said, a paper-thin layer of protection there. It can help just a tiny little bit. It'll help. But don't count on that. Don't let that be your primary reason. So that was my rant for today. Now, if you have any questions or comments, now the main topic, as I said today, is becoming an owner-operator, the relationship between an owner-operator and a motor carrier, the pros and cons, the opportunities that arise either being an owner-operator or leasing on owner-operators to your carrier, but also the obstacles that you must overcome along the way. And there are obstacles on both sides. Now, when I throw around the term owner-operator, or some people call it a lease, or however you want to classify it, when I'm talking about owner-operator, I'm talking about a truck owner that drives their own truck, and they lease that truck onto a bigger carrier. That's what I'm specifically talking about when I say owner-operators. Now, some people will say, oh, well, you're not really an owner-operator unless you own the whole business and you're the carrier and you do everything. Then you own it and you're, well, whatever. You own the truck, you run a business. You're leased to that carrier. Now, how is an owner-operator different from a carrier? Really, it's just the responsibilities that you're held accountable for. An owner-operator And let's not overthink what an owner-operator is. A carrier leases a truck with a contractor driver, and essentially that's an owner-operator. From the carrier side, that's all that matters. You're leasing a truck, you're leasing capacity, and you have a contractor driver. And that could happen a lot of different ways. But owner-operators drive their own truck, lease that truck to their carrier. Now, one thing that I like to try to get everybody on the same page with is don't allow yourself to own a job. And what I mean by that is owner-operators too often become glorified company drivers. When you are an owner-operator, you are running a business, and it's important to keep that separate. You are running your own independent business. Now, you are contracted onto this other carrier, and the only reason that you have exclusivity under that carrier is because of insurance reasons. You have to be on their insurance policy. If it wasn't for that, you could be leased to multiple carriers. You own a business. Now, you also don't have to be your own driver. As I said, a motor carrier leases a truck with a contracted driver. If you're running a business and your business model is to lease trucks onto a motor carrier, you could also hire drivers to drive them for you. Now, as the owner-operator, as the person leasing the trucks to the carrier, you would have to be responsible to pay those employee drivers properly. But you could still do that. And you would still not take that next step and become a carrier. But, and you'd still somewhat be classified as an owner-operator. So, as an owner-operator, you have a lot of opportunities to have a great business, expand your business, have drivers working for it. You could have a fleet. You could have a fleet leased to multiple different carriers, actually. For example, you have the truck is leased to one carrier, and that carrier has to insure that particular truck. But if you had a second truck, you could lease it to a separate carrier. So if you are in business, you're leasing trucks to carriers, remember to separate yourself. You don't have to just be the driver of that truck. And that's a good thing to try to remember. Don't fall into that. Now, an owner-operator, and we were talking about liabilities with corporations and LLCs, you're still subject to those liabilities. If you're in an accident, you're still likely going to get sued. But as I said, attorneys always go after the deepest pockets. And if there's a carrier name on the side of that door, that will likely be the person they go after first. Because they have the insurance, they have the money, they have the assets, they have the cash in the bank, whatever it is, they will go there first. So that's a huge reason to be an owner-operator versus a motor carrier, because you have that protection of liability. That's probably one of the biggest reasons. It's one of the biggest benefits as far as risk. You are exposed to much less risk when you are an owner-operator leased to a carrier. Now, another thing to remember is the carrier leases trucks with drivers. Technically, the carrier could lease a truck from anywhere and hire drivers from somewhere else. A carrier could lease a truck from a leasing company, Penske, Ryder, one of those. They could lease a truck and go to a third party. They could go to an employment service or something in the order of that and hire drivers through them, where that employment service handles all the payroll, benefits, all of that, and they put that truck or that driver in that truck. Technically, it's not an owner-operator, but it's the same, as far as the carrier is concerned, it's the same situation, the same relationship with that truck, with the exception of one thing. Owner-operators, if you own the truck, due to some of the regulations in place, owner-operators cannot be force dispatched. And we'll get into some of the truth in leasing regulations and so forth. Owner-operators cannot be forced by the carrier to run their business however they see fit. If a carrier was to lease a truck, essentially they take ownership of that truck, and they could hire a third-party driver to be in that and pay them like a contractor. But of course, that contractor would likely do whatever they're told, because that's what the carrier is paying for. But because there is that separation, the driver doesn't own the truck, the truck is not technically belong to the carrier, that driver would still be a contractor. Now we already have a comment here about the liabilities and issues with commingling finances. If the switchboard will work here, let's go to Chris in Iowa. Chris, are you with us? Chris.
Yeah, hello.
There we go. Welcome to the show, Chris. How can we help you?
Yeah, I kind of caught the tail end of what you were saying about commingling finances and things like that. And this is actually something, you know, I've researched quite a bit, and I've spoken with attorneys and accountants about it. And I think what you're saying, that there's a little bit of truth to what you're saying. I think it's a little bit off. On the one hand, you talk about commingling finances. You talk about, like, say, using your personal credit card to make purchases for your business. Now, as long as you keep clear records of that, and you separate your business finances from your personal finances, and you use those business finances to actually pay for those charges, and you separate, interest, like say 20% on your credit card is your personal stuff, and the other 80% is your business stuff, and so you charge 80% interest to your, as long as there's a clear division, that's not necessarily commingling. It doesn't pierce the corporate veil from, as far as your liability protection goes. You can do that. I mean, I've talked at length with my accountant about this, and a gentleman named Gary Sutton, he's an attorney. He's actually written a couple books about this. And where you get in the problem is, especially in our industry, it's kind of a fine line, because, you are operating the equipment as an owner-operator. If you go out and you are in an accident, and due to your negligence, you cause a fatality or something, it's not necessarily that they can go after your personal assets because of your company that owns the truck, but they can go after you because you're the actual operator. But if you were to have, like, an employee driving one of your trucks, and they were to, go out and, God forbid, cause a fatality or, damage somebody's property, and you kept a strict, paper trail of the separation between your finances and the company's finances, and you did things like your annual minutes and all your reporting, and you kept, very good documentation showing that this actually is a living, breathing, working corporate entity, you are going to be a lot more protected. Now, where you get in trouble is if you just go out and you say, okay, I'm gonna go buy a bed for my house, and I'm going to use my debit card from my business checking account to pay for that bed, and then you never reconcile the fact that that was actually an income for yourself. I mean, it's not reasonable that your trucking company would be buying a queen-size bed for your house.
Exactly.
Consider, a personal income. That's more where the commingling of finances comes in. But just by simply using your personal credit card to make, corporate purchases or signing personal guarantees, I mean, it's almost impossible, especially in the trucking company, to get started, or the trucking industry, to get started without making personal guarantees and without, using your own personal finances, without investing your own money. So that's pretty standard. And just one other little thing, I don't want to occupy everybody's time, but one thing that I've done is I'm actually a small carrier, and I have a couple trucks. And I actually have one company that owns my trucks, and I have a completely different company that has my DOT authority. The main reason I did this actually was for insurance reasons.
Right.
So I could make trucks active and inactive and not, you know, have to worry about ownership and things like that. But that does give you another level of protection. You know, if I lease an owner-operator onto my company and they cause some damage and somebody wants to sue my company, they can only go after the assets that's in the DOT authority company. They can't go after the assets in the equipment company because those are two separate entities. And I've actually got them set up in separate states with separate laws. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, depending where you set your company up, you have different protections based on that state. So that's all something to look into. And like I said, Gary Sutton has a book, a couple books, and if anybody's interested in learning more about it, he lays it out pretty well.
Right, and what you said is all true. And like you said, if you keep very, very strict and accurate records of all the monies that you spend, if you can absolutely prove that you've kept everything separate, that's what you really have to do. And as you said, what gets most people in trouble is they'll take a draw, they'll pull money out of that account and use it for personal business, personal things, and they won't reconcile that as either payroll or a draw, and they'll just use company money. And they may even go back in and put money back in, but they don't run it through their accounting system the proper way. And that's where the attorneys will show that you're just using this as a blanket, and you're not really using this as a separate entity. It's just another bank account for you. And records really will help that. And the other thing that you mentioned was if you have another person driving for you, if that is anybody's business model, I absolutely, there's no doubt that you need to be incorporated or an LLC. You absolutely need to, because then you do have a much better layer of protection. You can still be, you know, ultimately it rolls downhill and the person with the deepest pockets is always on the hook. But there is a much better layer of protection if you are not the one that is personally at fault. You're not the personal, you know, you're not the one that's personally behind the wheel. So everything you said, Chris, is absolutely true. But I just want to help make everyone aware that it's very, very important and very, very difficult to keep this level of accuracy with your records. It can be done, but you have to look at the risk versus the reward. Is it worth the risk or worth the extra effort for the possibility that you may be protected? And for most people, just that alone, if they're driving the truck themselves, that's probably not going to be a good enough reason. But absolutely, if you have employees working for you, then without a doubt, I would highly recommend everybody takes that extra step. And then you did also mention, you also mentioned, and this is something I should bring up, the FMCSA requires any rolling stock, any equipment, trucks that the company owns, the carrier owns. So even if you personally own a truck, or if your LLC or corporation owns the truck, and that's the title, the name on the title, then that has to be insured. Even to the point that, let's say that that truck is parked. You've had it on the road for 10 years, and you take it off the road, and now you put it behind the barn, and you just use it for parts. As long as that title is registered under that company name, unless you go through the extra effort of proving that it's no longer roadworthy, that you still have to have it insured to be on the road. But by putting that in a separate entity, putting a different name, even if it's your name or a separate company name, then you can take that off your insurance and make them active and inactive as you see fit. But I will also say that even that is not a complete protection from liability. There are some, almost all of the mega fleets that do these lease purchase programs, they don't technically own the trucks. They're owned by some other shell corporation. And they do it for the exact same reason, to separate the leasing company from the carrier. Almost every time there is an accident, even though that leasing company has absolutely zero to do with the carrier operations, they are still involved in the lawsuit. So always keep that in mind. No matter how you are involved, you have a hand in whatever happens, and you will be, you know, and your liability and your responsibility for everything may be minute, but you, as long as you have anything to do with the corporation or the operation of the truck, if there's any accident involved, you're still going to be hauled into court for it. So, but every bit of separation helps. So, and thank you, Chris, for the call. Did you have anything else?
No, that's great. I appreciate it. You have a good show. Thanks.
And thanks for your call, Chris. That is absolutely important to know. The separation is the most important thing, is to keep everything separate and keep very extremely good records on all of it. We do have some other calls on the line. If you have any questions or comments, press 1 now. Elizabeth is screening the calls now. I see we have a few questions lining up. She's in there screening them. We are already 41 minutes into the show. Every week, the same thing happens. We have the last 5 or 10 minutes of the show, the switchboard blows up. Tonight at 8 o'clock, I have to cut us all off. So if you have a question or comment you want to add, go ahead and throw that in the hat right now. Go ahead and press 1. Get Elizabeth on the phone. She's in there. She's been bored this 45 minutes. Make her do some work. Now, the owner-operator leased to the carrier. We've gone over that. From the carrier side, what are the pros and cons? Now, the motor carrier, and as Chris said, having trucks that are not underneath the umbrella of the carrier has its benefits because you can make them active and inactive as you see fit. Now, when you lease on a truck to the carrier takes possession. You know, they say possession is 9/10 of the law. Once you sign a lease, that carrier is now in control of that truck 100%. That carrier is responsible for all the safety functions of the truck, for everything that truck does. The carrier ultimately is responsible as far as the legal issues go, which means the carrier must keep that truck insured. If that truck was to be released from the carrier and go somewhere else, the carrier simply has to fill out a form, write a letter to show that the lease has been broken and they can remove it from the insurance. So that's one benefit to having owner-operators. You can bring on owner-operators as you need the capacity. And if things change, you can always let them go. Now, if you're leased to a carrier as an owner-operator, I don't want you to be afraid that they may someday let you go. Although, keep in mind that you have no contract, per se, of any length of time that they must keep you. It's possible that you have some type of a duration in your contract, but typically they can all be broken earlier than the duration of the contract. One of the other disadvantages to having owner-operators from the carrier's point of view, and I'm saying this from experience now, I have several owner-operators leased onto my carrier. And as I talk about frequently on my show here, I solicit direct freight often. We're always making calls. One thing that's difficult with owner-operators is it's very difficult to make commitments, because the benefit of being an owner-operator is you cannot be forced dispatched. The disadvantage to having owner-operators is you cannot force dispatch them. So it's very difficult to make commitments to customers if all you have is owner-operators. Now, you can go to your owner-operator and say, look, I need to hire you for this route or this customer specifically. And if they lease on to you, that's great. But if they are already leased to you for something else and they don't want to work for that new customer that you have, you can't force them. If you have a company driver, that company driver must do everything that you tell them to do. And that truck is yours, and you can put it on any route that you want it to be on. So the company driver has a choice. They can go work somewhere else, or they do what you say. So that's a disadvantage from that aspect to have owner-operators. One of the reasons that I'm looking at possibly adding company trucks this year is for that reason. I want to be able to go in and make solid commitments without having to run it by anybody, make solid commitments to my customers and say, absolutely, I can handle this for you. I can put this many trucks on it. And, you know, they will not waver from what they have to do because I'm in 100% control of how they're dispatched. That's an advantage to having company drivers versus owner-operators. Now, if you look at the mega fleets, most of them have that type of a scenario where they have the owner-operators for the access capacity, but they have their company drivers first. And that's one of the reasons why company drivers tend to get priority treatment. If there's a company truck sitting next to an owner-operator truck, that company truck gets dispatched first because that company truck is the one that the company can force and rely on. And they have a commitment to make that truck payment, to make sure the driver gets a paycheck. They have that commitment. Of course, they also have the commitment to the owner-operator that has the lease, but their commitment only extends so far as, you know, make sure that they get such and such attention. So that's extremely important to understand. And we'll jump over to Mike in Pennsylvania. My switchboard is extremely full today.
Kenny.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing? How can we help you tonight?
Not bad. I was listening to Chris earlier when he called in, and he indicated that he has two companies set up for insurance purposes where he can take a truck on and off. The question I have is, would that be something beneficial for somebody who is a single truck owner? For example, you have your own LLC as an owner-operator. And also, how exactly is that set up into the insurance company? Which company is exactly insured?
Okay. Now,
which entity?
What Chris was saying was, and the way the FMCSA recognizes it, the motor carrier must insure every truck that they have underneath their umbrella. So anything they have control of, which is owner-operator trucks or trucks that they have on their name on the title, they are responsible for that. So if you are a one-truck operation, and let's say, just hypothetically, you don't work in the wintertime. You know, there's a lot of, I see you're in Pennsylvania, there are a lot of farm trucks, for example, that only drive in the summertime. And in the wintertime, they take 3 or 4 or 5 months off. The only way to be able to take that truck off of your insurance is, if you have one truck, is to completely cancel your insurance policy, which would ultimately cancel your authority. In order to keep your authority active, you would have to keep insurance on at least one vehicle. All right? Now, if you take the vehicle away, your authority goes away. Now, the other thing is, let's say you had two trucks. Both of them are under you. And you want to park one for the wintertime and maybe go over the road. Okay, that second truck would have to be completely separate now from the carrier. So if you own both of them and your carrier is in your name, then the only way to do that would be to literally either sell the truck or put the truck under another corporate name and separate it from the carrier side. Does that make sense?
So that second entity, which owns the second truck, it's not subject to the same requirements as...
Correct. Now, what happens is...
Yeah, okay.
What happens is if you... Let's say you have Mike's Trucking LLC, and you have Mike's Over the Road Trucking LLC, okay? Mike's Over the Road Service or something like that. You have two separate companies. Mike's Trucking owns the trucks, and Mike's Over the Road Service is going to have to have the authority. You'll have to lease the trucks from each other, okay? So you'd be essentially an owner-operator to yourself. And then when you break that contract, you have to also, just as if you were to release an owner-operator, you have to write a letter to show that contract is now broken and release it. The same applies if, for example, let's say you have an LLC and you personally, Mike, you own the truck, but you incorporate or you have an LLC that's Mike's Trucking LLC, but you personally own the truck. You have to lease your truck, even though you own all of it, you have to lease your truck to your carrier. Now, there are a lot of people out there that are doing this. And I should add that if you are in that situation, you are supposed to carry a copy of that lease with you in the truck. If you're stopped at a roadside inspection, you're supposed to have a copy of the lease or a letter. And FMCSA has regulations on exactly what this has to show, but it has to show that the truck is leased and is under the safety and control of the carrier side. And when you leave to remove it from the insurance, you have to write another letter to release it from that control. So there, and I'm bringing that up because there are a lot of people out there that have a carrier, that an LLC or corporation with the authority, and they're driving a truck that's actually in their name, not the corporate name, and they don't have that letter with them. There was a time last summer when I believe it was in Oklahoma, that's exactly what they were looking for. They were stopping every truck and that was an owner-operator lease truck. And, you know, there are some of the big fleets that are easily recognized as such, especially the one that has a big blue star on it. And they were stopping every truck, and that was the one thing they were asking for because they knew that was easy money. Show me your lease. If you don't have it, it's an easy ticket. And it's CSA points. So you have to have that lease in the truck with you as well.
But which company is insured?
The carrier is the one that has to be insured.
The one that has the DOT and the MC number?
Exactly. The DOT and MC number is the one that carries the insurance. That's ultimately, that's regulated by and issued, the numbers are issued by FMCSA. So an easy way to understand that is the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. Safety is their primary focus. It's supposed to be. And they want people to be safe as far as, you know, training aspects and things like that, but also financially. They want the safety for insurance purposes, and they make sure that they also regulate brokers, the broker bonds, so that financially all the transactions are financially backed and secure, so there's more safety, okay? That's their focus. So the carrier, the only reason you really get an MC number is to register with the federal level that you carry your insurance. That's really all they do is track that, yes, you're insured. And then they have all the other regulations of, you know, are you operating your business properly? But the number one thing, in order to activate your authority, in order to activate your MC number, you have to post your insurance. You have to have your insurance company file that. So that's ultimately, that's their primary goal, is make sure that the carrier, the MC number, is insured.
Okay. So just so that I understand this, the owner, the entity that owns the equipment doesn't necessarily have to be insured.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you answered my question. Would that be beneficial for a guy who has only one truck to set that up?
Well, if you're running year-round all the time, then probably not. One truck, if you have your own authority with one truck, you run year-round, there's no reason to do that. You should probably have, if you have one truck and you only have one truck and you never plan on having any more trucks or less trucks or anything, then that truck should probably be in the corporate name for that little bit. Like I said, it's a paper thin layer of protection, but it is some protection.
Okay.
And there always has to be at least one truck insured. There always has to be an insurance policy to keep that MC number active. It doesn't even have to be owned by the company. You know, it could be an owner-operator or a lease truck, but it has to be insured under that MC number to keep the MC number active. So if you only have one truck and that's how you plan on keeping it, then it won't help you at all. If you had two trucks, maybe you are, you know, you're just one driver, you have two trucks, you have your summertime truck and you have your wintertime truck, then it would be beneficial because you could swap them back and forth as you needed to. But if you have just one truck, then no, it wouldn't really make a lot of sense.
Okay. Just one quick question. I have a friend of mine who has about four trucks, and every single time he has to add a truck, the insurance requires him to make a down payment for the first and second month, I mean last month, which comes to about almost $2,000. However, that is for us to lease them to him. However, I was working with this other company. Whenever I lease them to them, they can pull the insurance, you know, now no problems, and whenever I come back, they just take it out. And they didn't have to have those problems of having such a huge amount of money every single time I wanted to work with them. So they must be set up the way we've been talking, because they can pull the truck on and off the insurance company, and he's not able to do that because of the way he's set up, basically.
Right. That may be a possibility. It may be just that.
Yeah.
And he's just swapping the trucks out. So, yep, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Mike. We'll jump over to Casey in Minnesota. Casey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just had some comments. You know, you're talking about the insurance thing. It's actually funny that I'm listening to this because I just went through this a year ago. I've always only had one truck, and I had it in the company name, no big deal. Bought another truck, and at renewal time, they quoted me $20,000, and I'm like, there is no way I can pay that.
Right.
You know, you're basically paying for two trucks and one driver. So, but more so, somebody that's kind of on the fence on an owner-operator, just leased on to somebody, you're kind of looking at becoming a carrier. There's a lot of paperwork involved, and I've been my own entity for 20 years, and I still learn new stuff every day. You know, there's a lot of different regulations and a lot of paperwork involved from, you know, your maintenance, and you have to hire yourself every year. And, you know, like you brought up the trip lease, a lot of different stuff involved. You bring out a lot of risk too, as far as, you know, you may do work and never get paid for it. So,
The paperwork is, that is what separates, you know, there's the risk and there's the different way you have to run your business, but the one thing that distinguishes an owner-operator from a motor carrier, once you get your authority and you take that next step and now you're a carrier, the first thing people notice is, oh my God, this is a lot of paperwork.
Yep. And you're wasting your money for a long time.
That's true.
Just to getting paid every week, at the end of the week, you could be waiting 45 days before you get your first check. So,
that's absolutely true.
That's kind of a huge thing. So, I guess that was my two cents. But somebody that was on the fence may want to think twice before you jump over. So,
well, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much, Casey. And, you know, the paperwork is a huge thing. It's a huge factor. And I didn't even get really to the meat and potatoes of what I wanted to talk about tonight. We were talking about some contracts last week, and what I really wanted to get into was the truth in leasing requirements. And I'll just throw this out there. The reason that there's so much paperwork is because there is a lot of regulations as a carrier, a lot of rules you have to follow. And when it comes to bringing on owner-operators, the written lease requirements, which is 49 U.S.C. 376.12, if you are an owner-operator and you are going to lease onto a carrier, I highly recommend you go to the FMCSA website, you look up 376.12, written lease requirements, and you read exactly what's supposed to be in that contract. That has to be there. One of the big ones that I want everybody to pay attention to is the carrier must pay owner-operators within 15 days. There is no exception to that. They must. If you are leased to a carrier that's paying you in, you know, one of these deals where I'll pay you when I get paid, run it as if it's your own, they're doing it wrong. Unfortunately, that's just how the rules work. Now, that being said, I want to throw a couple things out there. As far as cash flow, there are options. There's quick pay options that a lot of brokers have. You can negotiate your payment terms with your customers. And then there's the big one, which is factoring. Next week is all about factoring. My show next week, I'm going to welcome my friend Josh Warren on from Ennoble Business Capital, and we are going to discuss the pros and cons of factoring. I've talked about how bad it is before, and I highly discourage anybody with a one or two truck operation from going that route, but some people have to do it, and then I want you to understand what you're looking for. And there's a lot with the contracts, there's a lot with the fees that are involved, and we will discuss a lot of that. More with contracts tomorrow. I'd like everybody to catch Rico Muhammad's show. I will be co-hosting with Rico, and we will have Hank Seaton from TransportationLaw.net. Hank Seaton is a monthly guest of Rico's, and Rico's asked me to co-host with him because these are the types of questions we will be covering. So tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, check Rico Muhammad's show, Rates and Lanes. You can find all the shows at letstruck.com. Click on the link for the audio road. You can find all the shows, the show times, and the phone numbers. You can check out our Facebook group, Trucking with Authority. Just search it on Facebook. You can answer all your questions there. We have a lot of members that have the experience and the knowledge that are willing to share, and you can catch more upcoming shows. I'm also about to unveil a new website that I've been working on where I'll be able to write all the blogs and articles that I've been sharing, and hopefully that'll become a resource here real soon, and I'll unveil that shortly. It is the top of the hour. The show has flown by as it always does. This is Kenny Long. Please, everyone, dream big, aim high, strategize your plan, and earn your success. Have a good night, everybody.